Okay, here we go. Okay, so we are in Parshas Chayisara, Tavshin Ayin Beis. Okay, thinking about Sarah now, turning our focus to Sarah, it is overwhelmingly clear. It's not like you have to read between the lines. It's not like you have to look for Midrashim on the Psukim. It is overwhelmingly clear that Avraham's success, his importance in the world, his stature, the fact that he is the father of the Jewish people, is due to Sarah and is attributed to Sarah. Okay? We are going to look in the Psukim and in the words of the Chachamim, the wise scholars of our nation, to see how Torah talks about Sarah, and then after we finish speaking about Sarah in terms of her achievements with Avraham, we'll take that to a bigger picture and understand what Sarah represents for all of us, what Avraham and Sarah represent, the union between the two, and her achievements, not just in her own lifetime, but forever after. So first of all, if you flip all the way back to flip back to Lech Lecha. The first page we're going to stop at is page 58, okay? And this is just after Avraham arrives in Eretz Yisrael to start his mission, okay? And as soon as Hashem basically gives him the promise, Lezarecha etein es haaretz hazos, to your descendants, your offspring, your zera, I will give this land. Two psukim later, you have vayhi ra'av ba'aretz. Then there's a famine in this land. So there's really no land and there's no offspring yet, but there is a bracha for both of them. There's a land that you can't live on. And they come to Mitzrayim. Okay? 56. Page 56. And he asks Sarah, he says, tell them you're my sister, that they will do good for me, and I will live. My nefesh will live big lalech on account of you. Do me a favor, say you're my sister, and then they will be good to me. Okay, they will give me a lot, I will gain a lot, on account of you. And this is exactly what happens. She says he's a sister, and we'll talk about what this means on a philosophical level, and why this takes place in Mitzrayim. And a lot of these themes should begin to sound familiar. We're just plugging them in now to this and these words. And they took Sarah. And when they took Sarah, they gave Avraham all kinds of gifts. That's Pasuk Tes Zayin 16. Treated Avraham well for her sake. He acquired sheep, cattle, donkeys, slaves, maidservants, female donkeys, and camels, right? And then after he paid Avraham so well and did so much, you know, good to Avraham, Hashem afflicted his house, the house of Paro, with all kinds of plagues. Al devar Sarai, Ashes of Rome, on account of Sarai. And Paro says, what'd you do to me? Why, you didn't tell me she's your wife. You told me she's your sister. Now take her and go. And Avraham leaves Mitzrayim with Lot, and Avraham is very, very, very wealthy on account of Sarah. That's number one. Okay, so he's a very rich man, and obviously he has more status in the eyes of the people because he's so wealthy and powerful, and not only that, he's clearly seen as a man who has great spiritual powers, and his wife is untouchable, and because of Sarah, he is now well-known, revered, and very wealthy. Correct? Pshat. Now, keep going. We'll skip a little bit ahead after the War of the Four Kings and the Five Kings. Skip to page 74. After Hashem makes him a promise that he will have a great nation and they will be enslaved in Mitzrayim and again leave with great wealth, Avram says, but I don't have a child. And in chapter 17, Hashem changes Sarah's name to Sarai. Now we're on page 74, Pasuk 16, and says, hold it. No, we're missing something. Sorry, we're skipping. Go back. Page 70. Avraham does not yet have a child, but yet he has a promise to have a great nation. So Sarai, look at the beginning of chapter 16. Sarai, the Ashes Avram, the wife of Avram, did not yet give birth for him. There were no offspring from the union of Sarai and Avram. But she had a maidservant whose name was Hagar. And she says, I haven't given birth. Take my maidservant and I will be built through her. Look at the last four words of Pasuk Gimel, Pasuk Beis. Vayishma Avram l'kol Sarai. This is not the famous phrase everybody always quotes later on when Sarah says to kick out Yishmael. This is much earlier when Sarah comes up with an idea that he should have a child with Hagar. And Vayishma Avram l'kol Sarah. So Sarai. So right away Avram is listening to what she says and to her advice. And he takes Hagar, as you know, and they have Yishmael. So Yishmael also is because of Sarah. And then in chapter 17, Yud Zayin, there's the Bris Milah, and that's where Hashem tells him, you are going to have a great nation, I'm going to bless you, but it is going to come from a child that you are going to have from Sarai. Pasuk 16, 15 and 16, Elohim said to Avraham, at that point his name is changed to Avraham, and Sarai is Sarah. Sarai ishtecha lo tikra shema Sarai ki Sarah shemo. Her name is now Sarah. The shorish of the word Sarah is Sar, officer. The one who's calling the shot. She's Sar, right? She's the officer. And her name is Sarah. And I will give you a child through her. And the child that will come through Sarah, and Sarah alone, is called Zerah. In fact, Avraham, not yet coming to grips with this, in Pasuk 18, says to Elohim, Lu Yishmol Yichye Lefanecha. How about Yishmol? Let him also exist, so to speak, before you as considered my offspring. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers him, and she says, no, your wife Sarah will give you a child, his name will be Yitzchak, my bris will be with him, and his descendants afterwards, and Yishmael will be a great nation, but ki beYitzchak yikara lecha zera. Only through Yitzchak, who's from your wife Sarah, are you this going to be counted as your legitimate, eternal offspring that are directly connected to you. Although your other child will be a great nation, they're not considered zera the way Yitzchak is. So now Yitzchak, in the future of the Jewish people, is only through Sarah. Then turn to page 92. And this is the story of, again, Avraham in another place in Gerar. And again, they take Sarah. Okay? And again, he calls her my sister. And again, he recognizes Avraham's greatness, that he's a man of God because of what happened to him for taking Sarah. And he explains, I asked her to please do the chesed to me and call her my sister. And what happens? What does Avimelech do for Avram? Gives him tzom. Page 94. Not only does he give him cattle and sheep and servants, like more gifts on account of Sarah, he also says, my whole land is yours. Okay? Everything is for you because of Sarah. And then we hear Sarah having a child and all the nisim associated with that. And then, of course, the famous command by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Avraham when Sarah says, kick out Yishmael, and Avraham disagrees very strongly with that. He does not want to do it. It's Hashem says, page 96, Yomer Elokim al Avraham, al yera beinecha al hanar, don't let it seem so wrong and evil in your eyes about the, you know, what she wants to do with this boy and the handmaiden. Kol asher tomar lecha Sarah shema b'kola, every single thing Sarah tells you, listen to her. Okay. So, we already have a very long history here of Avraham understanding that on account of Sarah, he has become who he is. On account of Sarah, he is wealthy, he is powerful, he's supposed to listen to her. He does listen to her, even when he disagrees with her. He's told to go back and listen to her, to listen to everything she says, to trust her implicitly. In addition to that, we see in the beginning of Chayei Sarah that basically in the entire parsha is devoted to Sarah. The first perek talks about her death, and Chazal point out that no one gets this much attention and praise in the entire Chumash as Sarah, because nobody is told, you know, has the privilege of being described in the Torah as being perfect all the years of their life. So as Rashi says, Vayihiyu chaye sara mea shana ve'esrim shana ve'sheva shana, 127 years, Rashi says, kulam shavin latova. They're equal in goodness. It was one straight trajectory from the beginning to the end of a process to perfection. Nobody gets this type of praise, that all her years were perfect. In addition to that, we know that Sarah died at the same time as the Akedah. Not only did Yitzchak offer himself up completely to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the Akedah, but Sarah, who produced Yitzchak, also at the same time, that's exactly what happened to her. But she didn't come back to life. She heard about the Akedah. She died, Rashi says, and there's a very strange diuk in Rashi. If you look in the Rashi, page 106, it says that Avram came to make a hesped. Rashi says, Nismacha Misa Sara La Akedas Yitzchak. The Torah tells you the two stories of Sarah's death and Akedas Yitzchak next to each other. Lefish Al Yidei Besuras Akedah, that because of the news of the Akedah. And now look how Rashi describes this, and you tell me how awkward this is. Shenizdamein bana l'shchita, that her son was prepared for slaughtering. V'kim'at shelo nishchat. What does that mean? If he would have said v'kim'at shenishchat, and it was almost that he was slaughtered, and when she heard that, she died. That's not what Rashi says. V'kim'at shelo nishchat, and it was almost that he wasn't slaughtered, that her neshama went away. What is Rashi trying to say? What is strange? Kim'at, and it was almost shalom nishchat, that he wasn't slaughtered. So, Sarah, in her perfection, and in her position as the source of all bracha for Avraham and for Yitzchak and for the future of Klal Yisrael, she has perfected herself, and her perfection is demonstrated in this, that when she heard that Yitzchak was not offered as an ola, as a pure and complete offering, she worried that maybe there was something imperfect in his total attachment to Hashem, in the purity of his heart and his mind and in his love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he wasn't, at the last second, he flinched, he had a misgiving. The last second, he didn't muster up total devotion, and he was unworthy for a sacrifice, and that was the reason that she lost, that her soul departed from her. Now, the Balei Machshav Aseyu is not a death of disappointment, but rather that when she heard that Kim'at Velo Nishchat, let's take it to the next level, almost that he wasn't slaughtered, that Yitzchak was not slaughtered physically on the Akedah. That's, we know that for sure, because he married Rivka afterwards and he had children. Okay? But in the Olam HaMachshava, in the world of intentions, in the intangible world of a person's desire, which is free to reach the greatest heights and is not limited by the physical reality that needs to be taken into consideration, that we live in a real world, and he has to live in the real world. He, in the Olam HaMachshava, he was completely slaughtered, no question about it. And in fact, we say in Yom Kippur that Afro Shel Yitzchak, the ashes of Yitzchak are still piled up before Hashem on the Mizbeach, because in intention he was totally slaughtered perfectly, but in the real world he wasn't. Sarah heard that in the real world he was not slaughtered. Okay, not in this world. She was a great prophetess, but even great prophets don't know the perfection of someone's Machshava. No Navi knows what's exactly going on in somebody's thoughts. She was sure that her child was perfect in Machshava, and he was. And she too reached the Madrega that as Yitzchak offered himself up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, she also achieved that same Devekus and allowed herself to, and her neshama was taken from her in a moment of pure attachment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That attachment is demonstrated by the fact that she was afraid that maybe something was missing. In other words, that's a demonstration of her complete and total perfection. That's the fear. That's the fear that brought her into Olam Haba, that maybe there was something missing. And if that's the person's greatest fear that takes away their neshama and brings them into Olam Haba, that's a testimony to the absolute perfection and purity, the ultimate development of a person's attachment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So although she died from that fear, that the one of the ways of looking at it is that that's a testimony to her perfection, to the fact that all of her life, this is the only thing that drove her. Now, the whole first chapter of Vayechai Asarah is talking about Avraham acquiring the Maaseh Machpelah, but there's a little problem. Shlomo HaMelech, in Eishes Chayil, which we're going to go look into, says, Zamama Sadeh V'tikacheha, right? She prepared the field and she acquired it. Actually, although Avram bought it, technically, and buried her in it, she acquired this field. It was her achievements that made it a possibility that Hebron, this place that she was buried in, would become the burial place, not just of her and Avraham, but that every neshama that dies passes through Maaseh Machpelah on its way to Gan Eden. That's the Medrash. She acquired this. By the way, Hebron, the word is chibor, connection, right? She acquired this. In fact, if you look in Chayisara, twice it says that the field of Ephron arose. It was elevated in status. Look at this. After Avram completes the negotiations, look at Pasuk 17 on page 108. Vayakom Sede Ephron. What does it mean, Vayakom? Vayakom Rashi says, Tekuma Haisolo. It had an elevation. It was elevated by the fact that Avram bought it for Sarah. Okay? And then in Pasuk 19, he buries her. And after he buries her, Pasuk 20 ends the chapter. Vayakom haselda vahama'ara, and the whole field and the cave in it, okay, that Avram bought, had another tekuma prior to her burial and after her burial. Before her burial, it was elevated in status because it was her achievements in Ruchnius that brought Hebron into our possession. Hebron's a big Shabbos this week, right? And after she was physically buried in that cave and on that soil, in that field, the physical place had a tekuma in elevation because of Sarah. And then the rest of the parsha, which is Perek Chaf Dal, which is a very long parsha, is the search for Rivka, and make no mistake about it, they're not searching for Rivka, they're searching for Sarah. They're searching for another Sarah. And when you look at the end of Perek Chaf Dalin, when they finally get married, the last pasuk, Samach Zayin, Vayivieha Yitzchak Ha'ohala Sarah Imo. Now that is strange syntax. That doesn't work well. It's awkward. Vayivieha Yitzchak Ha'ohala, and Yitzchak brought her to the tent. Sarah Imo. That's kind of like floating there. Ohel shel Sarah Imo. He brought her into the tent of Sarah, his mother. What is it trying to say? So what does Rashi say? Vayivieha ohala. He brought her into the tent. Vaharei, and behold, she was Sarah, his mother. What does that mean? She was Sarah, his mother. That all the nisim that used to be constant and present in the ohel of Sarah returned with Rivka. What were the three nisim? And obviously we're not talking about a regular ohel here because these three nisim were duplicated many years later, guess where. What were the three nisim? Bracha b'isa, a bracha in the challah, in the dough. Ner doluk me'erev Shabbos, at Erev Shabbos, a candle that a light that didn't go out. Ba'anan kasher al ha'ohel, and the cloud that was always over the tent. These were, by the way, they were expressions of her fulfillment of three mitzvahs, by the way. Challah. And challah, of course, is going to be represented by the lechem upon him in the Beis HaMikdash on the Shulchan. And then, Ner Dolok Mer of Shabbos, Aler of Shabbos. That's the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash that had a light that never went out. And Anan Kasher Ol Ol, that's the Mizbeach Hazav, the golden Mizbeach that they brought the Torah on, that always had brought an Anan into the Beis HaMikdash, into the Mishkan. These were the three Nisim in Sarah's tent. Eventually, the Beis HaMikdash, a Klai Yisrael built, and the Kalim that were put into the Beis HaMikdash. And do you know how many chapters in the Torah are devoted to this? Four in Sefer Shemos, and the whole Vayikra practically deals with the Mishkan and the purity of the Mishkan. So these three Nisim that are the contents of they represent the vessels and the avoda, the service, and the Nisim and the Beis HaMikdash. They are, her home was the miniature Beis HaMikdash. In other words, she set up a place of kedusha on this earth, and it was duplicated later on a national level for everybody. But make no mistake about it, this was Sarah's tent, and this was Rivka's tent, and Yitzchak is not comforted for Sarah, no matter what he has, until he is married to Rivka. So, Sarah takes on a huge role here, obviously, and the whole Eishes, the beginning of Eishes Chayil, the first few psukim which we're going to look into, are attributed to Sarah. Now, what we're looking at here is, so specifically, what did Sarah do? She was a great tzaddikus. What did Sarah do? Okay, what was her, you know, how would we kind of crystallize where the perfection came from? Right? Now, in order to think about this, we have to go back to a much greater idea, and that is that the first of the Avos and the Imahos, Avram and Sarah, were not just, people that conceived of, they conceived of the truest ideas and were the first to spread them. Torah sees this in a much bigger picture, okay? That there was an original first man, an original first woman, and we've spoken about this a lot, and there was a sin, and now the world needs to achieve a tikkun, okay? Avram and Sarah, Chazal see, are the ones that start the process and ensure that there can be a tikkun on the sin of Eitz Hadas. So let's go back for a second, just to remember, because we do this a lot here, but these are pervasive themes, what the sin is, and therefore then we'll begin to understand what Sarah's contribution here was, and we'll see it actually in the pasuk. And then we'll understand the Eishes Chayil. It'll be some of the psukim in the Eishes Chayil. And we'll understand what Sarah Avram keeps asking her, say you're my sister, say you're my sister, and now Avram gets all the gifts and all the wealth because of her. Okay, that's a strange thing with the say you're my sister. What's the secret behind that? So we know, okay, that Ish and Isha, you tell me already, it's not just a story of a man and a woman. What's Ish and Isha? Right? Ish represents always the intellect, the ability of a human being to conceive of ideas that come from a completely different place, from Hashem's spheres, ideas of pure truth, ideas that stand as that support the world, that are the cause of the world. A person has the capacity to elevate their intellect, their capacity to understand that which is way beyond their physical self, and they can purify their ability to understand and ability to receive truth to such a degree that they become prophets of greater and greater and greater levels. Now, Rambam speaks a lot about this in the Mor Nebuchim, that's the guide to the perplexed, especially in section 3, chapter 8 and 9. He speaks all about the capacity of a person to develop their likeness to God. And this is man's noble form, as he calls it. And he says that, and this is the ability of a person to know, to have domination, to rule, to control matter, to subjugate its impulses and achieve a harmonious state of existence. And he speaks about the that individuals, there are individuals who are permanently with God and who are permanently thinking about only that which is beyond them. And he calls this a union with the divine intellect. They only reflect on a mental representation of an intelligible, which he's saying here is something, the grasp of truth regarding everything, and achieve a union with the divine intellect, which lets overflow towards them and fills them up. And that is what we call the male, the capacity of a human being's mind to go transcend, to go way beyond the here and the now. What do we call female? What a person desires, their gut desires, their passion, their what drives them, what gives them, what causes them to be devoted to something, to invest all their energy into something, to build something. Now, let's be honest. What's the stronger force? Obviously, everybody knows the Isha is the stronger force. What we call the Isha is always the stronger force. So there, now we have a major problem. We have seen in our own lives, and every generation has seen this in their world, and the Torah talks about this, and it's very obvious, that no matter how purified a person's intellect can be. Okay? No matter how much a person can get themselves to a point where they divest themselves of their own perceptions and reach for the divine and the true, is it guaranteed that that attachment in their minds, in what they know to what is true, will preserve them and protect them forever and they will never fall? Of course not. We have people that know enormous amount of Torah and they can seem to conduct themselves according to the knowledge in their, you know, what they know to be true. No matter how much a person knows in their head, it is not guaranteed. There is no choma, as we spoke about. There's no wall. There's no guaranteed protection that that person is safe. However, if a person's heart is purified and they love only HaKadosh Baruch Hu and they're devoted only to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's all they really see as their agenda, and they've lost interest in everything else and it's completely pure, they've removed themselves from any other desire, so can you trust such a person? You can trust this person much more than a person who's being compelled by intellect, because when a person is compelled by intellect, they still are like a servant serving a master, right? Because they compel their desires to conform to what they know is true. But when a person's desires are pure, then everything out there that they understand or don't understand will be interpreted in through the prism of their love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Anyway, whatever it is, even if they don't know so much, they don't understand so much, everything they see around them will be interpreted somehow or another as some act of love and kindness by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they will respond with HaKaras HaTov, gratitude and love for Hashem. So we know for sure that it's most important to purify the heart and to get the heart to a place where it is completely in the service of what the mind knows is true. To harmonize, to bring together, to unify what we know and what we desire. Because if they're separate, we're in trouble. And if they are separate, the one that must be strong first is the ratzon of a person. Okay? And that's how we educate children. Way before they begin to understand complicated things, we try to build the Avas Hashem in their hearts, a love for Hashem and a love for the mitzvahs in their hearts. Now, where is the pasuk in the Chumash that shows us that Sarah was misakein, fixed, so to speak, this sin? What's the sin? The sin is, as we always speak about, it doesn't mean two ancient people sinned and we're all suffering and somebody has to fix it. The natural tendency in humanity, which we call the sin of eating from the Eitz Hadas, which is to determine to decide things according to how I see things, my perspective, my desire, and not what's right. That's the normal tendency. That's called the sin of eating from the Eitz Hadas. Where do we see Sarah overcoming that first and foremost? So if you look back in Lech Lecha, okay? Actually, no. First, go to Bereishis. First, go to Bereishis, Perek Gimel Pasuk Vav, page 15, bottom of 15. No. Pasuk, page 16. First few words on page 16, and then also hold in your hand, chapter Tesayin 16, which is on page. Here, 70. Okay? Look at this. When the few words that the Torah uses to describe how the unpurified woman, so to speak, heart, so to speak, that follows its own desires, okay, totally kidnaps the intellect, and the intellect, instead of being a source to bring the person objective truth and keep them in line, becomes simply a puppet to provide for the heart, so to speak, the desires, rationalizations, excuses, legitimizations of what they want to do anyway, and it stops doing its job, which is bringing truth to the person, because the person has shut out. They do not want to hear it. They're so guided that by the force of the woman is so overpowering. It doesn't hear the man. It doesn't just take in. It doesn't want to have any contribution from, so to speak, the man. It does what it wants. And then when it's so sure that it's going to do what it wants, guess what happens to the male? It just caves. it caves and it becomes a puppet of the female. Look at these psukim. She takes the tree, right? She v'tikach mipiryo, she takes of its fruit. V'tochol, she eats it. Look at the next four words. V'titin gam l'isha ima v'yochol. She gives it to her husband who's already with her, and he eats one word, v'yochol. If you look at it, at the pshat, at the simple pshat of the story, you would say, if in the, on a simple pshat level, what do you mean? She offers him this fruit, and he should pose an argument. He should say, what is this fruit? Where did you get this fruit from? This is not the fruit from the tree that Hashem said not to. You're not allowed to eat this fruit. Are you crazy? Put this down. Right? There should be some type of resistance. But the pasuk says she gave it to her husband who was already ima with her, all entangled. And he just eats it, which means to say when the woman controls the situation, my desires, the intellect is helpless, it's entangled with it, it eats, it caves, and it doesn't do its job, it just begins to serve as a puppet for the heart. So that's really a description of what happens to people when we let not the objective truth, as revealed to us through the Torah, guide us, and when we don't make sure, like the Torah says to man and woman in the so-called punishment or curse for the sin. It's not a punishment or curse. This is all guidelines. This is enlightenment. The Torah is saying, the only way to proceed, tells the Isha, El Ishech Teshukasech, to your man, the intellect, the ability to perceive truth, you should have your, to be your only craving and desire. That's what you need to want. For who Yimshol Bach, and he must dominate you. You must let the truth that can speak to you, speak to you. That's the tikkun. Okay, it's not literal. By the way, it is so foolish to read the Torah as if God is giving a mitzvah to men to dominate women. Because our ancestors who are here to fulfill, to fix, so to speak, and complete the world, lived in their own lives in a situation that was exactly the opposite. There is not one case of our avos and our imahos where they took advantage of the permission, so to speak, that a man has, as you might read the pshat, to dominate his wife. Who dominated who? Sarah Avraham here. Look at the story. He always listened to her. He begged her. He became rich because of her. Everything is attributed to her. Everything. In fact, the Nesiva Shalom says that after he finished burying her and he started to look for a wife for Yitzchak, the pasuk says, Avram Zaken, Avram is old, Baba Yamin, Vahashem Berachas Avram Bakol, and Hashem blessed Avraham with everything. And the Nesiva Shalom says, because everybody knew that all his brachas only came from Sarah, so they're going to see, so the Torah wanted to affirm that he also deserved bracha, and Hashem blessed him after Sarah died too. Like he also was ready to get a bracha on his own. there's no case, and Yitzchak and Rivka, she tells her son Yaakov, you listen to me, and she's not worried about if Yitzchak's going to be upset. And Yaakov and Leah, he asks, and Rachel, he asks permission, can I leave Lot's house? Lavan's house. There's so many examples. Miriam and Yocheved and Amram, there's many examples. But the point is, there is no example anywhere of one of our role models living, you know, taking advantage of this so-called, you know, permission, because it's not permission and it's not a mitzvah, and the Torah doesn't believe in one person dominating another person. What we're speaking about is that in terms on a deeper level, there is a hierarchy, and because our Isha, the woman, is so powerful and makes the decisions, and the man, so to speak, is so in the grip of that, that the woman is told, you must devote yourself to that, allow it to rule you, allow it to dominate you, otherwise everyone is lost. Now, look what happens. Here's Sarah's greatness. Look at the same words. Basically the same pattern of words repeated in one of the first great acts that the Torah describes Sarah as doing. And look in page 70. Avram got a bracha that he would be a great nation. But Sarai was at this point barren. Okay? So she knew that she could not, at this point, bear him offspring. So what normally would be the gut reaction of a person to want for themselves? That's the force, that's the power, that's the danger. To cut out from the mind what's good in the long term, what's good objectively, and do what I want right now, what's good for me, right? So, but what happens? Look at the pasukim here. right? And she says, take my servant, Vayishma Avram lekol Sarai, and Avram listens. Vatikach Sarai, same words, Vatikach, right? Sarai, Eishes Avram. Sarai is referred to here as Eishes Avram. She is the wife. She's unified with Avram. Okay? She's not like the first Ish and Isha, who are very separated from each other, each one not concerned with the unity between them. Okay? And look at the last few words of the pasuk, but Titain Osa La Avram, and she gave her to Avram, Isha, her husband, lo to him as a wife. It's almost the same phrase. Vatikach, Vatitain La Isha. She took and she gave it to her husband. So the first, you know, it's not, Torah doesn't write in essay form. But this is seen by the Chachamim as the tikkun on the sin of the Isha. To take and to give to her husband so that the husband can be built, so to speak. In other words, if the Yetzer of a person, the Isha of a person, the Ratzon of a person is that the truth should expand in this world and be brought to the world, and that's their interest, then however that can take place is their desire. So if Avram can be built, so to speak, can expand, can have more influence, can build a nation, that's the objective. That is really the tikkun on the sin. Does this make sense? Right? Does it make sense? This is the tikkun on the sin, to recognize that the of paramount importance is that the truths should have an opportunity to multiply, be fruitful and multiply and become part of this world and become known. And to that extent, she does whatever she needs to do to make sure that happens. This is the classic case of the woman and the man, so to speak, in harmony. This is the classic case of the union between the seichel and the intellect. Now, what we're going to do now is quickly look into, by the way, the Or Gedol Yehu, which is such a beautiful sefer. Rav Gedal Yeshur speaks, there's no time to do it now, but he has a long piece about Sarah, about Eishes Chayil, beautiful, beautiful stuff. But I'll incorporate some of his ideas into what we're doing. But look at Eishes Chayil. Eishes Chayil, this is Shlomo, and before we start this, remember that Rambam says in the Mora, how genius is Shlomo in Mishlei by comparing the woman, the bad woman, or the white, or the good woman. He's speaking about this quality, this capacity, which is has a name. It's called Chomer, but this Ratzon, this desire, which can either be so good or so bad, and that's what Shlomo is talking about in Mishlei. Okay, but it for sure is the fundamental power that makes all the decisions. Okay, and it if it chooses to be connected to the truth, the hasagot, conceptions of truth that the human being is capable of, if it chooses to devote itself to that, there's nothing better, there's nothing more perfect. Now, this is Sarah. This is what Sarah represents. And here's how Eishes Chayil speaks about her. So, Eishes Chayil, it's a chayil, it's an act of achievement, of conquest of the self, right? Devotion to something greater, miyim, so who can find it more precious than anything. Now, look at the next pasuk. Batach ba lev bala. Her husband's lev totally trusts in her. V'sholol yo lo yechzar, and he will never be at a loss for any gain. He will gain and gain and gain and gain, and that will come from a total trust in the wife. Now, we're talking about Avram and Sarah here. First of all, Batach ba lev bala, he trusts in her, means that when a person knows that their heart is completely devoted to truth, then the person is free, never afraid that maybe the choices they're making and the way they're seeing things is tainted by their own small, blind self-perception, self-delusion, what they want. When a person's heart is pure and devoted exclusively to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then a person can trust what they're learning and can trust how they're seeing the world and can trust their understandings and can go further and further and further. And Avram and Sarah represent this in a state of almost perfection where all of us are achieving that, but they are spoken about as having achieved it. When Avraham said to Sarah, say you're my sister. Okay? We know there are many psukim in different parts of Ksuvim that speak about Chachma as my sister. Imri l'chachma achosiat. Say to Chachma, you are my sister. Sister means equals. I think Imri l'chachma achosiat is from Koheles. Say, they're equals. Equals, not father, daughter, so to speak, not master, servant, but equals. Wife and sister are almost interchangeable. There's a famous piece that we're not going to talk about now, but Hashem, that Klal Yisrael, we've spoken about it many times. First Hashem calls us his daughter, then he calls us his sister, remember, then he calls us his mother. Achosi, my sister or my wife, are interchangeable. Partners, equal, we must be together. And he trusted her completely. And therefore, in the physical world, he was given great wealth, and his name became important, and he achieved great status in this world. He was revered, but also because in the world of Ruchnius, that's the key to unfettered, ongoing success, that you could trust your own self, your own real internal interests, because they're purified. That's what Sarah represents. The total Avram trusted Sarah completely. And that represents a human being whose two main forces are united. And that person will never be at a loss for any gain. They will gain and gain and gain. Now look what it says. Gumalasu tov lo ra kol yemei chayeh, talking about Sarah. She was gomel to him. She bestowed upon him only good, as Rashi says, all her years were equally good. And never ra. Tov ra is a clear reference to the Eitz Hadas, right? She was the one that bestowed only tov. Only the goodness. Torah is called tov. Ki lekach tov nasati lachem. A person cannot achieve in Torah, cannot achieve in understanding, if they are coming at it with their own agendas. It's not possible. So once that's eradicated, they can achieve tov, real truth. She was allowed Avraham to bring to the world all the God concepts that he was supposed to bring to the world to enlighten mankind. But without a pure, trustworthy heart, so to speak, or sorrow wife, this could have never happened. And therefore he listened to her all the time. And once, when he didn't agree with her, Hashem said, everything she says, listen to her, because she's pure. She's totally trustworthy. She can be trusted in every account. Then it says, Darsha Tzemeru Pishtim. She distinguished. She was Doresh between wool and linen. It's all metaphorical, of course, and shotness on a shot level, but this means Yishmol in Yitzchak. V'tas b'chefetz kapeha, and she works it with the will of her own hands, which means her own investment and her own effort is the, she distinguishes ultimately between Yitzchak and Yishmael. Now, very fundamental idea, and that is that the difference between the avoda, the work, the job, the mission of the avos and the mission of the imahos should be very, very clear. The job of the fathers, now we know what male means, right? The avoda of the avos, the patriarchs, the male fathers of our nation, is to bring God concepts to humanity, to enlighten humanity, and the main understandings they brought were, one is associated with God's overabundant love and everything that means. That's Avraham. Yitzchak is man's responsibility to judge themselves and see if they're worthy. That's Midas Hadin. That's what Yitzchak brings to the world. We'll do this later on. And Avraham brings Yaakov brings what is called Emes. It's actually also associated with Rachmanus, pure truth. They bring to the world conceptions of truth. They bring, and they enlighten the world. They teach people why we're here and what we're doing. And the mind can grow and grow and grow until it achieves prophecy. They open up the mind of people, and they make people understand what life, physical life, is really all about. How that's the job of the avos. But the job of the imahos, of the mothers, right? The job of the female, of the isha, is to make sure that the desire, the ratzon, is completely purified. And that is described in terms of building the environment, the home, the Beis HaMikdash, the environment where everything is devoted with great love to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the love that builds a home. And don't forget, in the Beis HaMikdash is a whole nother shir. The Shulchan, the Menorah, and the Mizbeach represent the Shulchan bread is the physical efforts and aspirations and, you know, and the involvements of man. That's bread, eating. The Menorah is intellectual, right? Light, understanding, the whole, in all intellectual pursuits of a person, and widening, expanding of the understanding. And the Mizbeach HaZahav represents the Ketores, that's the breath, the Neshima, that's the heart of a person, the love, the desires of a person. On every level, everything, the environment is one that is pervaded with devotion to Hashem. That's the mothers. They build Klal Yisrael in the houses, in the environment. And not only do they create the environment, they determine who is Klal Yisrael and who is not. It is always the mothers who say this one is and this one isn't. They are disentangling the confusion that the first sin brought to the world of right and wrong and good and bad. They're disentangling it. That's what they're doing. They're always disentangling and saying this is what is what can continue to exist as part of what will become Judaism, Yiddishkeit, and this cannot. They're always being bocher. They're doing the opposite. They're not entangling light and darkness. They're disentangling. They build Klal Yisrael. They determine who is Klal Yisrael. And they guarantee that the ideologies, the truths that the Avos work so hard to convey to the world have an environment, have fertile soil on which to grow. And if not for them, there's nothing in the end. Absolutely nothing. And that's why the Torah speaks about specifically Sarah as the one who ensured, who's the secret to all of Avram's successes. And here it says, we'll just end with this pasuk, Zamama sode v'tikacheho, mipri kapea nata karem. She prepared the field. Through this life's work, she acquired Chevron. Chevron is the place of chibur between the heavens and the earth. As we said, all neshamas that die go through Maris HaMachpelah, which is elevated due to Sarah's presence there. And then it says, and from the fruits of her hands, a whole vineyard is planted. Who's the vineyard? Klal Yisrael is always called Hashem's vineyard. Okay, so Shlomo HaMelech is telling us that, and Rambam says this, that this power called the Isha is so overwhelming, you know, such an overwhelming force that it can be perfected. It can be purified. And when it's purified, the opportunities are limitless. It also can be corrupted very easily. That's what we always have to watch out for. And that's why the Torah brings so many isurim, restrictions, mitzvahs, guidelines, how to make sure that it's not corrupted. Because if it's not corrupted, then it is a source of all the bracha. It's a source of the future. It has, there's so much latent potential in the pure heart of a person, the pure ratzon of a person, that we're always being told countless ways to preserve it, don't do anything that will corrupt it, stay away, no matter how enticing it is, from those things that are going to take it off course, disconnect it from its husband, so to speak. And don't forget when Sarai became Sarah. Oh, there's so much more to talk about. And Avraham, the Avram became Avraham. What were the two letters added to their names? Yud-Kei. Those are the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that name is huge because that's the name that comes into play. And I'll just leave you with this dangling till Purim. That's the name that comes into play with the ultimate destruction of Haman, which represents all the evil. Because where's Haman? Hamin ha'et, to go the source of, right? And what was Sarah's real name? Rashi tells us. She's Yiska, switch the letters. Case ka, yud ke. Ki yad al case ka. Remember Hashem says about Amalek? They're holding back, so to speak, Hashem's enthronement on God's throne of glory. Ki yad, there's a hand, that's Amalek. Al case on the kisei of yud ke of Hashem, as if they're holding back the total flowering of the awareness of Hashem in the world, that's Amalek. Sarah and Avram, that Yud-Kei, right? That's the Koach. That's ultimately going to be the one that destroys that the force that brings us down. And Sarah, Yiske, Keska, this, you know, the whole conquest of Amalek is attributed to Sarah. Proof, who remembers the famous Sarah Rabbi Akiva? Yes. He was teaching his students, and they started dozing off. So he wanted to wake them up. This is, everybody quotes this, right? So he said, I have a riddle for you. Why did Esther deserve to dominate, or to be the ruler of 127 countries and ultimately kill Haman, destroy Haman? Because Sarah lived 127 years. In other words, the destruction of Amalek goes straight back to Sarah, to her achievements. That's a whole nother thing. That's in Yiskin, her other name, but we'll leave that. But anyway, Baruch Hashem, we have, the Torah speaks about, you know, I gave a class last night, and somebody was very, you know, uncomfortable with the fact that there's males and females, and isn't it in the Torah, I don't know, the whole male-female thing in the Torah is not so pro-female. And all you need is an honest reading of the Torah to see that the Torah understands human capacity, calls them names, male and female, tells you the power, the strengths, the dangers of each one, tells you what the perfect union is, and doesn't make silly little comments about who's better or who's more important. There's no such thing in the Torah. Hashem himself has male and female names. It all depends on what force we're talking about. Okay. All right, everybody. Have a wonderful week.
One thing to add, Esther?
Yes.
Fantastic.